Good evening, anarchists everywhere, and welcome to tonight's Anarchism in the UK. I'm Ian Bone. Tonight's guest is Eleanor Hootson. Welcome, Eleanor.
Hi, Ian. Nice to meet you.
Okay, you're a member of Liberty and Solidarity in the London Coalition Against Poverty. But how did you get interested in politics in the first place?
I ran away from home to join the hippies. I was extremely bored in my hometown, which was dull, and nothing interesting seemed to be about to happen there. The TV was full of images of the Newbury bypass, and the people that you could see on the screen were clearly doing some quite impressive things, having a lot of fun, and it looked as though they were just a really solid group of people that could do what they liked and no one could stand in their way.
And you were watching this on your TV screen. Yeah.
Thinking, I want some of that.
And your parents said, yes, that's fine, off you go.
They said I had to stay until I'd done my GCSEs, and then I left. I left just having finished the GCSEs in the summer of 1996.
And where were you at home then? Where was home?
Colchester. Actually, having seen some other places is probably not the most rubbish hometown to have, but it seemed that way at the time.
So did you get to Newbury actually while the anti-bypass action was still going on?
I did, yes. I very clearly remember getting off the train at Newbury station and being under the vague impression that I would get off the train, get off of the station, and then the anti-bypass campaigns would be happening just there. And when I got off the station, it was just a small town.
So and I tried to place them in the way.
Yeah, and I thought, I'm going to have to find my way from here. It just literally hadn't occurred to me at all. But when I did find the route of the bypass, it had been cleared. All of the major battles were sort of behind us, and the thing was essentially lost. But there was still some actions going on to prevent the building itself. So in a way, I was quite lucky because I think the evictions and the clearances of it were the most traumatic part. And I probably it's quite good for my mental health now that I happened to miss them.
And was the camp welcoming to you when you sort of came in on your own? And
yeah, they were fantastic. It was the most brilliant thing. It's one of the real strengths of that movement back then was that you really could just kind of like show up, muck in, and you would be completely welcomed and looked after, and you would have a really good bunch of friends really quickly.
And did you get involved in your first direct action there then?
Yes. Yes, which was all things like sitting on bulldozers to stop them working and that kind of thing.
Well, that always seems, people say just, but it seems incredibly brave. I'd be really scared sitting on a bulldozer, you're going to get crushed or something. Was there something, the workmen who were doing the evicting, were they sort of horrible brutes, or did you sort of come to some sort of tacit agreement with them?
I think it changed over time. When the clearances at Newbury were going on, it was extremely brutal. Mm. It was very, very vicious stuff. That continued even the eviction of the Trollheim camp in the A30 in Devon. That was incredibly brutal. And people were really properly injured. Over time, it kind of became sort of ritualised, and you ended up having, there was a sort of an industry around the eviction of these camps. There were people setting themselves up as consultants in how to evict hippies, and our side had also started to almost, it was becoming very formulaic, so it was
a battle of the specialists on either side.
It was a battle of the specialists on either side, yeah. But we'd also lost a lot of the spontaneity, I think, and a lot of the ambition, and we were just kind of going through the motions. And so I sort of, the movement kind of tailed off of its own accord, and I went on to other things when that happened.
So what was the next thing you moved on to after that then?
Having finished with the road protest movement, or the road protest movement having sort of effectively finished, I mean, it's still going on in a small way now, but I felt it was time to leave it. I sort of lived on various traveller sites and in squats and things, and sort of eventually got a bit bored of being part of this relatively small little counterculture with no real sort of position in normal society, and thinking it would be nice to get out of that. So I trained as an advice worker with the Citizens Advice Bureau, and that sort of led on to the work I do with the London Coalition Against Poverty, because once you start looking into things like housing rights and benefits rights and things, and you start thinking, you know, what would can this knowledge be used elsewhere? Is it, can it be used in a more revolutionary way? It's clearly of use to the class struggle, you know, and London Coalition Against Poverty was formed just around the right time for me, just when I had picked up those skills and thought that I might make a useful addition to it.
Just going back a sec, you think you got involved in, was it the Wandsworth Eco Village and the Manchester Airport campaign?
Yes, I mean, was that,
it always strikes me as incredibly tiring, you know, to be living in camps all that time and wearing personally. How did you sort of cope on a personal level, was it?
Yeah, it was a completely ridiculous lifestyle. I wouldn't recommend anybody to it. You see people walking around now, they're like husks, some of them, that went through that. Well, I don't know. I mean, you get the very, very, very intense times, actually. A lot of some of the best times of my life and some of the worst. And I think it, in some ways, it sustains you being part of that kind of thing, because you do have like a really tough, resilient community of people around you all the time. I think in that whole time, I mean, I never had to worry for a second about where would I live or
how did you survive financially?
It was absolutely, yeah. I mean, at the beginning, I was had difficulty claiming benefits because I was quite young. Sort of claimed benefits at various times after that, did little bits of work. But you, like I say, you never seriously had to worry for yourself financially, because it was such a strong collective. And then that's the thing that I took out of it most, that I think was the most brilliant thing about it, is that you lived communally, you ate communally, you were going to be sustained by the community that you were in no matter what happened. It was absolutely stunning.
Yeah, there weren't any problems around alcohol and drugs in those days then. It was a pretty positive experience for you all around.
Yeah, there was problems with alcohol and drugs, obviously. I mean, that's part of the reason that I left, I think, really, that I stopped doing that, because you have this situation where I think there's a kind of tolerance of things that a wider society wouldn't tolerate, which is just not always a good thing. If somebody really was properly drinking themselves to death, it's not good that everybody's sitting back and going, oh well, you know, we do what we like here, you know. And I think that it did become a large problem, and also that there was quite an arrogance about, oh, we're saving this bit of land, we're saving this tree, and we're just going to sit here on this piece of land. Sometimes being like sustained financially by like the local population while doing like really not very much but drink and take drugs and mess around. And yeah. we tolerated a lot of people in our community doing that kind of thing, and I think it's sort of ultimately we paid the price in the effectiveness of our movement because of it.
Just finally on that, were you sort of climbing up the trees and all that?
Oh yeah, did trees, did tunnels, all of that.
I think the last thing you mentioned before was the Crystal Palace protest when they were going to build the multiplex, and so that was sort of back from the country into the town again.
Yeah.
And how was that? Does that sort of get more?
See, that was good fun, but yeah. I mean, at that point, I think that was the point when it was really clear to me that as a movement, it had kind of gone into a dead end. It didn't have the same creativity about it. People were not really thinking tactically about what they were doing. They were going through a formula that had been produced before. A lot of it was just waiting for this one eviction, where you would hope to cost them as much money as possible, make it very difficult for them. But there wasn't any particular idea that you would prevent them evicting you, and there wasn't any particular idea that you would think of interesting or imaginative ways to defeat the project before that day happened. And we actually won that one. Well, you wouldn't think it the way that I was talking about it, but we actually won. It's quite ironic.
That was a great victory, stopping the multiplex on the Crystal Palace site, although they are planning to put some luxury homes on a similar site at the moment. But again, there's quite a lot of vocal opposition. Just to quickly tie up on the environmental bit, what do you think of the sort of environmental movement today, the sort of the no third runway at Heathrow Airport and that kind of stuff, and the climate camp?
I mean, they get a lot of stick for being essentially a middle class reformist movement, which I feel.
I never said that on it.
I feel it's a little bit unfair, those criticisms from some people, because if you look at Earth First, from its inception to its eventual sort of zenith in participating in June the June the 18th. riots against capitalism with reclaimed streets. It took about 10 years for it to gain any semblance of anti-capitalism or radicalism, really. And so it's quite unfair for people that went through that process and became more radical to now turn around and say to this new lot, well, you know, you've got no class analysis, you're not radical, you're not anti-capitalist. Having said that, I think that the chances of this current environmentalist movement developing in the same way that we did, it is reduced because of the existence of a lot of NGOs, a path into a career in environmentalism.
Yeah, climate change is like a career option rather than a statement about the planet.
Exactly.
These days.
And without a really solid analysis of power, it's very tempting for people to think, if I get myself into a position of power, I will be able to change it and it will be different. Whereas we know that individuals may be able to make decisions, but they need to be pushed by a strong movement from below in order to do that. Without that analysis, people will go into those careerist options and the movement will possibly never develop the same flavour that we were able to.
Yeah. When did that sort of swan across your horizon? I mean, obviously from personal experience of what you're up to, but specifically anarchism, when did you sort of start to think I might be an anarchist?
It was just kind of in the air on the road protests. It was sort of... It was very easy to see how it would work, because the way that our struggles, although they weren't specifically anarchist, they were very broad-based, you never saw any hierarchy in the way that we organised. And so you could see organisation without hierarchy working every day. You came to think of it as normal. Out of all the different tendencies around on the camps, the anarchist was the one that made more sense, better than crystal worship or paganism. So it wasn't really a big surprise that I became an anarchist in the end.
And one of the problems with anarchism has been the getting out of the so-called anarchist ghetto that anarchists tend to develop, hang around with other anarchists, socialise with other anarchists, and never reach out to the wider working class. I mean, how do you think we can move on from that in your experience?
So this brings us to the London Coalition Against Poverty. I think that it's just an incredibly simple formula that we've somehow
here's the simple
get.
Formula, everyone.
Okay,
get your pens and pencils
formula.
Out. This
okay.
is the elixir, the philosopher's stone, the elixir of life. Here it comes.
Okay, just, right, guys, you just have to do something that is useful. Right. You just have to do something that is useful. You know, there's a lot of talk about, like, oh, how can we welcome working class people into our existing organisations? And you have to look at it the other way. You have to say, like, how is our organisation of use to the working class? If it's not useful, people won't come. So this is what I like about London Coalition Against Poverty. The very first time that we went out leafleting the housing office with... just basic leaflets saying, these are your rights, don't let them deny them to you. The instant response, we had like 2, 3, 4 people come up to us and say things along the lines of, it's really good to see that there's someone on our side. Mm. And you'd see straight away that people do understand that there's a them and us and that there is some kind of battle going on and that there are sides. And when somebody comes along being useful and very obviously on their side, then they will respond to it really well. And that's literally all there is to it. Just do something fucking useful.
I take it from the LCAT website. We formed an organisation to challenge the councils and the landlords. The challenge has to be direct, disruptive and well organised. Mm-hmm. Amplify that a bit.
Oh, OK.
The challenge has to be direct, disruptive and well organised.
Yes, it does. I think... it's probably easiest if I give you an example.
Yeah, for sure.
A lot of the early work that we did and that we're still doing is around council housing, and it's around the practice that's developed of housing offices doing what in the trade is called gatekeeping, which means that they find ways to avoid taking an application for housing, so that the best way to try and get housing is to make an application as a homeless person. Mm. So they will try anything to prevent you making that application. They'll give you an application for just joining the general council housing list.
Is this just because the government targets or local authorities?
It is to do with the government targets. Yeah. There are general government targets.
I just find that incredible. You roll up, you're a homeless person, and they'll try and fob you off and tell you can't register.
Yes, absolutely. It's standard across all of the South East. And I know that some people listening to this will will not believe it. But I think anybody that's worked in one of these places or has had to go down there will instantly recognise it, because it's just absolutely standard. And it is because of government targets. It's because the it's because central government has said to councils, you must cut the amount of homelessness in your area, and we will give you extra funding for doing it. Now, there is no way of cutting the amount of homelessness in London without, like, building a lot more council housing or doing something quite drastic, which the councils are not able to do. The only way to bring the statistics down is simply to prevent people appearing on the statistics by preventing them making a homeless person's application. There is no way of challenging that unless it is, as you say, direct and
well
organised.
And I guess the people just wash up on their own. They're easily put off, don't they, their rights.
Exactly.
And just give up and go away.
Exactly. You need to... and equally, it's of no use sort of writing letters, or it's of no use, even if you've just been turned away like that, it's of no use going to a solicitor or something, because they will say, you've got a right to make an application, go back and make an application. Mm. It's very difficult for anything to work, except for just very directly what we do is go down with a bunch of 10 to 20 people, walk in there all together, having worked out the plan ahead of time, and say,
Anarchist
right...
And just thinking ahead. It's getting better and better.
And say, right, nobody here is leaving until you take an application and you house this person. And so that's all we mean by that. You know, you just it needs to be direct. It needs to be direct action that gets results. It needs to be well organised. You don't want to mess it up and let people down. And that's what we do.
Reminds me very much of the claimants' unions in the 60s who did similar things in benefit offices and wouldn't leave, so gyros were paid out and people got special grants and so on. I mean, how do people get hold of LCAP in the first place? I mean, how do you get alongside people and do you sort of leaflet?
Yeah, we just literally stand outside the housing offices with the leaflets. And the leaflets are useful in themselves because they say basically what your housing rights are. And we have heard of people managing to avoid being gatekept just by having the leaflet on them. And then the people there can see that they do know their rights. The leaflets also have... our telephone number on it, which for anybody experiencing difficulties and really, really wanting to have a proper go at fighting back, anyone listening in that situation, the telephone number is 07932 241737. 07932 241737. If you ring that number, then somebody will call you back and probably have a chat with you.
I hope those lines are being manned 24 hours as we speak.
They are.
Just going back to the name, the Coalition Against Poverty, it's a coalition of who?
It's not a coalition at all.
the first lie of LCAP.
The first lie, yeah. there's an existing organisation called the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty, who we have stolen both the tactic of direct action casework and also the name from them.
There's nothing wrong with stealing good ideas.
Exactly.
And also, you're in Liberty and Solidarity, as Sandy was last week. What is the difference then between them? Both seem to be campaigning organisations. What's the difference between Liberty and Solidarity and LCAP? Where do they sort of fit? Where's the fit come with those two?
Well, London Coalition Against Poverty is a broad-based group. I believe the work we do is very consistent with anarchist politics, but you don't have to be an anarchist to join it. And we encourage membership from a wider section of society as possible. Liberty and Solidarity is an organisation that you would join if you were an anarchist and if you were interested in doing useful grassroots stuff. We only want busy people.
You want people that are going to do something.
We want people that are doing something.
Paper membership.
Yeah. Exactly. You would join Liberty and Solidarity then in order to be around like-minded people and to discuss tactics and strategy and to implement that in the work that you were doing elsewhere.
I was saying that LCAP reminds me of the old claimants' unions, but in other ways it's quite modern. Again, from the website, LCAP, we use existing laws to achieve our goals. And that's quite a brave thing to say, because that leaves you open from the anarcho-purists to be accused of promoting wage slavery, reformism and so on. I'm sure you must have had that, but again, to working class people it seems a realistic offer of some hope and action.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you seem to have bitten that bullet and grasped that nettle of, OK, we're going to improve people's quality of life here under capitalism as a worthwhile thing to do. Do you want to talk about that? I mean, how are you weighed under with allegations of reformism? And
People on the internet will allege anything, but I can explain what we're thinking with that. I think that the problem with achieving anything is that you do need a really solid collective action, but it is not easy to create that out of the kind of experience that a lot of working class people have. Which is has created an expectation of being kicked and kicked and kicked, and no corresponding expectation of being able to fight back effectively. Now, if you have a situation in the housing office where there are certain legal rights and you have been prevented from getting even those legal rights, then a group of 5 or 10 or 15 people marching into the housing office and refusing to leave until it's sorted out will actually reverse that. And it's an amazing thing because it's almost as though it's just a paper wall that you've burst through. But for the person who was initially prevented from doing anything by that paper wall, because they were facing it on their own as an individual and not able to bash it down, it appeared to them like an unstoppable object that could never be destroyed. And just that experience of walking in there, looking at somebody behind the desk and watching their face change, the fear enter into their eyes, and then suddenly not be able to do like too much for you, that is a really powerful experience. Which convinces people, I think, of the value of solidarity and of a confident attitude and of the value of conflict. Now, when you have those people, you can start thinking a bit bigger. You can start thinking about challenging the laws that actually exist. If the thing that's stopping you from getting housing is that the law literally says you don't have to be provided with it, then walking into the housing office with 20-odd people, it's not going to reverse that. You will need a movement of several hundred working solidly for a couple of years. But you build that movement by giving people the positive experience, the germ of it, right at the very beginning. And that's LCAP. That's why it's of use.
So it's the collective experience of struggle, achieving
exactly.
goals.
Exactly. The collective experience of struggle. It's the experience of victory. There's plenty of collective experiences of struggle to be had.
Yes,
they're demoralising. They're of no use.
Anarchists have specialised in glorious defeat.
Exactly.
Since Nestor Makhno. Well, just give us a feel of it. Then you go into the office. You've got 20 people. Mm-hmm. Why don't they just call the police and chuck you out?
Interestingly, so far, housing offices don't do that. The job centre did that straight away. That can happen. If it happens, then you need to escalate. So you can do that in various ways. You can come back the next day with more people, or if you don't readily...
But isn't the experience of defeat then disillusioning and you come back next day with less people?
That's the difficulty. That's the difficulty.
That's the trick.
That is the trick to pull off. But it's absolutely essential that you do pull it off. Our experience at the job centre was like that. In when we were chucked out and they called the police, and it really did seem as though we weren't going to solve the problem with the tactic we were using. But behind the scenes, the job centre managers were really, really scared and were working really hard to try and find some way out of it. And the escalation wasn't very severe. Some days we did come back with less people than we'd initially had, but an element of the escalation is that it goes on and on and on. So going back 3 days running with three people is as much of an escalation as coming back the next day with double the number that you had before. And eventually you win through.
Have you not experienced any defeats yet?
We haven't experienced actual out-and-out defeats. What we've experienced, to be honest, is hollow victories. So we've persuaded the council to take applications, and then the person has been housed somewhere in a really terrible hostel that's not been massively better than what they had before, and we've then had to organise the residents of the hostels to take action on the hostel conditions. Then that gets a bit better, but you get there.
One of the other things I wanted to touch on with ALCAP, and again from the website, is that we will use whatever tactics we feel appropriate, including but not limited to direct action.
That's right,
which seems
yes.
a fairly good and vital break with the past, and again, freeing you up from sort of a narco-moralist who only believe in by any means necessary, as long as it's shooting someone with a gun, which they're never going to do, but would see other tactics as reformist. And you seem again to sort of bit that bullet.
I mean, well, the thing to remember is that we're not in charge. And when somebody comes to us, for our help and our solidarity, they have taken the very important and nerve-wracking decision that they are going to fight back. It's now not up to us to tell them how they should fight back at all. We are foot soldiers and they're the general. And so we try and give people the benefit of any information that we have. And help them to understand the avenues open to them. If there is a way of resolving the problem that is more effective than direct action, then they should take that. They should take that option. You know, if there's an option open to them that we feel is likely to be less effective than direct action, but that's still what they want to do, then again, that's their choice. And, you know, we may well be willing to support people in all sorts of things that aren't the sort of thing we would do ourselves.
Imaginative and creative and thinking on your feet rather than just having to... Every time you do direct action, very quickly everyone will know how to deal with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. OK, I mean, there seem to be three main aspects to our... There's the affordable housing, decent wages, benefit entitlements. Mm-hmm. You just want to tease those, you know, what you're doing on those. We've got about 3 minutes left, in fact. I mean, on the affordable housing, what's happening there? And that's obviously a huge problem in London at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, with the affordable housing, we're doing the gatekeeping campaign to try and prevent councils from stopping people from accessing council housing. We're also doing quite a lot around residents of hostels in Hackney. Mm. There's been some quite successful demonstrations involving residents of the hostels that have succeeded in getting like massive improvements to the conditions there. The rent of most hostels is about £350 a week for a room about the size of this.
Yeah. Say that again?
£350 a week for a room about the size of this studio. Which is a small studio.
We're in a broom cupboard here.
but I can tell you the reason for that. That's because the money for housing benefit comes from central government. Mm. It's one of the only ways that a council can get money from central government is housing benefit. And so if they own a block with rooms in it that they use for their own short-term accommodation, and they can get central government to give them £350 a week for each one, they'll do that. That's fine for everybody that's on benefits that are living there, but you find people that are working and on very low wages coming out of these places like £15,000-£16,000 in debt because they've had rent arrears stack up the entire time.
So then you have to get onto the benefit and sort that out as well.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, it would be a fantastic gain if we could prevent them from doing that and have reasonable rents in, you know.
So they stick you in a grotty hostel and charge you a fortune for doing it.
Yeah. And it's amazing. It's absolutely standard practice. It's not really known about that much outside of the people that it affects, but it's quite horrific, really, actually. The other thing that we're doing is we want to expand our operations a bit. We want to... we've got a lot of people that have become interested, that have been involved in a small way, but that and we've got a lot of room for growth that we've not capitalised upon. So what we want to do is to expand the gatekeeping campaign outside of Hackney and Haringey, where we've been most active, and we are going to need a lot of people to do it. We want to have a campaign of direct action at... education and direct action at every housing office in inner London.
We've got about a minute left. Do you want to quickly say how people can get involved in that?
Yeah. They can come to an open planning meeting on the 28th of February from 2:15 to 5 p.m, which is at the Arbour Centre at 100 Shandy Street. It's very easy to find. You step out of the tube station at Stepney Green Station. You see the Ocean Estate right ahead of you. And the Arbor Centre is the largest building on that estate, so you should have no problems. If you don't fancy that, if you'd like to get involved in other ways, we have general meetings Thursdays at 7:30. You can check our website for up-to-date details of that. We're also having an exciting training session in how to do direct action casework on the 1st of February, and that's at the Arbor Centre again. Check our websites for all the details, or contact us at LondonCoalitionAgainstPoverty@gmail.com.
All right, brilliant. Thanks a lot, Eleanor, for
Thank
coming.
You.
It was a really great interview. Cheers. Another Anarchism in the UK, same time, same place next week.